Blog Talk Radio.
Hold it now. Talk Productions, one of the few Black-owned radio networks that explore solutions to the Black community, presents Black Urban America. All you people that are listening by laptop, if you have a comment or a statement, just dial 516-531-9540. That is 516-531-9540. The lineup for this week, of course, Tuesday evenings, Black Group America, and my name is Kenny Jones, and I'm your host. Tomorrow, on Wednesday, every Wednesday, we have The Cutting Edge with Michonne Williams. On Thursday, we have Port of Harlem with Mr. Wayne A. Young. And finishing up the week on Saturday night, we have Provocative Thought with Carter Sneed. All shows starts at 8 p.m. Again, all shows starts at 8 p.m. Now, you know, ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry to report this evening there has been another shooting caught on camera in Wisconsin. And the young man was shot in the back 10 times. And there's been mixed outcomes. One news organization said he died, and another news organization said he's in critical condition at the hospital. And so if anyone have an update, they just to let me know. Now, tonight we have return guests. These two brothers are organizing the Second Amendment Unity Rally on September 26, 2020 at noontime. And they're here to explain what this rally is all about and what they expect to achieve from having this unity rally. And on the line, we have Mr. Nick Basil. And the other brother is Mr. Travis Johnson. Welcome back, gentlemen.
Hey, Brother Ken, appreciate you having us back home.
Yes. Nick and Travis. Right, which one spoke first?
Nick.
Okay. And also on the line, I have Ms. Michonne Williams, host of The Cutting Edge. How you doing, Michonne?
I'm great. I'm going to try to find out something about that guy who got shot, because it just so happens that my sister's boyfriend is friends with the father of the guy who got shot. Yeah. They grew up.
Wow. If anyone have a comment or statement, ladies, just press one so I could chime in. Fellas, the floor is yours. And explain to the audience, what is the Second Amendment? And why do you feel a need to have the Second Amendment rally?
Well, the Second Amendment is for us, our right to bear arms. And when you talk about your right to bear arms, you use it for multiple reasons, right? You use it to defend yourself. You use it to defend yourself not against home intruders or home invaders or people who may do harm to you, in the common sense. But when the the founders put the Second Amendment into place, they knew they put it in there specifically for tyranny, right? Like from their point of view, you also have to understand the times we're talking about. But from their point of view, they put it in there from tyranny, right? Because we had just been to war with London, with Great Britain, with England.
Mm-hmm.
And they felt, now it's funny how things go around, because they felt they were being controlled or being dominated or being terrorized by this other group of people. And so they used their Second Amendment, or they used their right to bear arms, which became the Second Amendment, to fight tyranny. So here we are, you know, 300 years later, and as a black community, we're having to fight tyranny. Just like you said, this young man was shot in Wisconsin. You know, that's a form of tyranny. That's terrorism is what it is. And so for us, we have to police our own neighborhoods. We have to be able to defend ourselves. We have to exercise our Second Amendment right, our right to bear arms. And so when you ask me about the Second Amendment, that's what it really means. It's our ability to be able to protect ourselves, one another, our family, and our community.
And I owe to that. Yeah, and what I say to that, Brother Kenneth, is the Second Amendment Unity Walk that will take place in Austin, Texas on Saturday, September 26th at 12 noon was created by the Elmer Geronimo Pratt Gun Club to begin policing our own black communities here in Central Texas that are not protected and served by law enforcement, and it's designed to create legislation for lawmakers to pass bills that will make us protected class American citizens in Texas and around the nation. We're going to continue making our black communities aware that we don't need to be afraid of owning firearms to protect our lives, our children, or our property that we value and own. The Second Amendment Unity Walk is designed to move descendants of American slaves to action on the economic and social battlefield towards justice for our fallen Buffalo soldiers who lost their lives to police violence, brutality, and the industrial prison pipeline complex. If you desire to stand up and fight against the system of white supremacy, join the revolution and dedicate your life to it. In the words of the great Dr. John Henry Clark, of what he stated, we have no allies, but we do have each other. And that is all we need to win this civil race war in America as the black collective. And rock steady, black power, all power to the people.
Let me ask you something. There's a word that you use, right, called unity. I just want to know, do you feel in 2020 that black folks, because we have different thinking processes. We have black conservatives, we have black liberals, we have black progressive, we have black corporate, we have black medical field workers, we have black folks all over the spectrum. How can we unify? How can we unify black folks from different thinking processes?
Well, you know, you're right in a lot of those instances. So what takes place is something has to hit home for people to get involved. A lot of times that's what happens because people are so far removed that they don't really get involved in anything, because if they're bootstrappers, if they say, well, you know, I pulled myself up by my bootstraps and I did this and I did that and I'm where I'm at today, that's fine. But when something happens to that individual or somebody that's close to them, that's when it hits home. And then that's when they realize, you know,
they're
I need
black
to do
again.
Something about it.
Yeah.
Exactly. Yeah. That's why I always
tell
people,
again.
Like, when you have all these things, all these other groups that want to, you know, appropriate on our culture, or culture vultures, as the youngsters like to call them. You know, everybody wants to be black until it's time to be black, right? So one thing that these people in corporate America or you know, have done for themselves, that's fine and dandy, and I'm glad they did it, but they can't, all the education, all the moving up the corporate ladder, you're still black at the end of the day. And somewhere down the line, all that money doesn't mean nothing to them people. So you, at some point, you're going to be black. They're going to show you. They're going to tell you. They're going to make it known that you're still black. You're not one of us. And so sometimes they need that reality check. And those people, when they get that reality check, that's when you can, that's when they come and say, hey, what can I do to help? You know, not everybody's going to jump on board right away. And we got that. You know, it's a process, you know. And just the more people that realize, hey, I need to do something any way I can help, whether we donate, you know, whether they donate resources or they're on the front line, whatever they do to contribute to help us move this thing forward will always be greatly appreciated, especially, you know, when they're doing something for the black community.
You know, I just wanted to say something to expand on that, what Malcolm X said. And Malcolm said that you might be a Methodist minister, you might be a black Catholic priest, I might be a Muslim mm-hmm. minister, but we have one thing in common. We're black men, and we're black men in America catching hell. And yep. I don't care if you're a billionaire, millionaire, or a thousandaire, a professional, or a laborer, or an unskilled worker. Well, there's one thing we cannot hide. It's the color of our skin. And people have to realize, even though they are millionaires and they climb those stairs, the corporate ladder or whatever, they didn't do it on their own. They had a community backing them. And there were people right. that went before them and knocked down doors in order for them to go to the next level. Ms. Sean, I know you have a question.
I have several, actually.
Well, go right ahead.
Okay. I am going to say this first before I ask. I text my sister. The guy is still alive, but he's paralyzed waist down. She texts me.
Wow.
Back. Okay.
Well, I want to say something, Ken, too. When she gets done, I'll talk about a little bit of that as well.
Okay.
Okay. Okay, my question is, are you part of the Libertarian Party, and do you believe some of the same things they believe, like minimum government, maximum freedom?
Well, as far as myself goes, Michelle, I am an independent voter, and right now I'm teetering the line of taking a look at all Republicans. I'm taking a look at all Democrats, and I'm also reviewing the Green Party 2020 agenda of what they have specifically designed for the descendants of American slaves, or ADOS, in regards to a black agenda that's going to transcend to all of us in America, because we've been affected by white supremacy. We've been affected by racism. We've been affected by the education system. We've been affected by not having access to capital for small business loans. So the thing for me is, in order for me to put myself out there and give my vote for our ancestors who did die for us, but they didn't want us to be stupid either. They want us to vote in our interests that aligns with our policies and our agendas that are affecting us on the local, state, and national level. So right now, my personal thinking is to vet every politician that comes on and says, hey, we're talking about African Americans. We have this, we have that. Well, let me go and research your policies to make sure that we as African Americans, which we're known as descendants of American slaves, ADOS, is that you have something specific that will interest me to get up and go to the polls to vote for you, so that we're not set back another 20 to 30 years like we've been doing for the past 55 to 60 years now. And once we take a look at those policies and we dissect them, and it's something specific where it's not talking about people of color or minorities or black and brown coalitions, then that's something that I am certainly on board to do. But it has to be something specifically in it for us regarding a black agenda that ties into intangibles and resources that we'll be able to use and pass down to our future generation, which is our progeny that's coming up, known as the Coronials, in this current time right now.
I'll speak for myself as well. I'm an independent voter, like Travis said. I grew up, most of my family voted Democrat growing up. And then I had to take a hard stance and look back and say, I mean, what has Democrats really done for black people, like, other than just take our vote, and I look at the Republicans as well, but the Green Party, I'm taking a hard look. Like, I mean, Travis, I mean, he pretty much said it all. Like, when you go and look at their agenda, like, during the debates with the Democrat debates, anytime the topic of reparations came up, they tried to stay away from it. They did whatever they could to avoid that topic. The Green Party is taking it head on. And so we're trying to work instead of a meeting with the Green Party and let them explain to us what does reparations look like to them, because based on their website and the information we gather from them so far, a lot of it is online with what we're trying to do. So I would be willing to listen to them more. And if it's online with what we're trying to do at ADOS, American Descendants of Slavery, then I would definitely advocate to vote for them on November 3rd at the top of the ballot. And then, because that's my interest, and I'm going to vote my interest. So if what they're saying is true and accurate and they're on board, I'll vote Green at the top, and then I'll vote my interest going down, regardless of who it is, regardless of the party. I don't believe in voting the party anymore. I believe in voting what best suits my interest and the interest of my people. So, libertarians, I know they're about small government. I know, they're big on Second Amendment. But if you look at, there are a lot of other candidates and other parties that also are the same way. So just because a whole party says, we prefer smaller government, we're Second Amendment, there are other people on the left and the right that believe the same thing. So what I have to do, I can't just pick and say, I'm going to vote this all the way down, I'm going to vote that all the way down. I have to look at each individual candidate and say who best aligns with what I believe, and that's the individual that I'll vote for.
Okay. I have another question that I have. What will it take for black people to feel safe right now?
I think for black people to feel safe right now. Oh, okay. I would say that in order for black people to feel safe right now, I think that it's important that we perform community policing in our own communities and make sure that we get out in the community and speak with the brothers and sisters of our community about what we're doing and make sure we're getting organized with each other. Because the importance of the Second Amendment will always be there, because it gives us the opportunity to be American. And it helps us eliminate the threats of white supremacists who are out to commit mass murders in black America on a wide scale. So the genocide of our American slaves culture is alive and well in this race war. But when we understand who we are not voting for at the ballot box concerning the lesser of two evils starring Jim Crow, Joe Biden, and Donald the Orange Man Trump, they will not stop killing us. I'm telling you right now, black America, they are not going to stop killing us until we force them to stop exercising excessive force under qualified immunity. They have, when they intentionally commit crimes, as we've seen with our brother most recently, like you stated, Sister Michonne Jacob Blake out of Kenosha, Washington, Wisconsin. The importance of the Second Amendment is critical. Currently, because we've allowed other ethnic groups and some of our own to destroy our lives through unnecessary violence. And when I spoke yesterday, I made sure I put the video out so that people can learn how to take action. If you can't be in Kenosha, Wisconsin with the family of Jacob Blake, then you can have other outlets where you can take action. And what I did yesterday was call up to the district attorney's office. And I left them a message because they didn't answer their phones. And usually when it's a crime like that that happens to one of our own in our tribe, they usually try to deflect and not answer the phone or say it's busy or leave your name and number and we'll call you back. And they've never called me back after I made my expression to them about Jacob Blake and what took place with that situation on Sunday. And then I called the mayor's office. I called the mayor's office, and the phone just kept ringing. It just kept ringing and ringing. And so they know what's going on, and they know what we're doing out here. It's more people that's starting to understand what's happening to us in our own backyard and how we've been deprived of resources and we've been deprived of protection and these police officers or these race soldiers being able to serve us in our community as we are taxpaying citizens that give our money to them every month, every day, every week. Because when we do those sales taxes, those things go out to the local community, then it goes to the state, then it goes federally. And so with that being said, we have to arm ourselves, because if we don't arm ourselves, our lives could be over right now. We could die as soon as we get off this phone. But if we armed ourselves and we're prepared for the threat that's here in front of us, we'll be able to defend our lives and protect each other, because they'll think twice about killing another brother or trying to shoot a brother in the back like our brother Jacob Blake. And I'm praying for him and his family. And if there's anything that we can do in order to help the family, please let us know, and we'll be glad to do that and lend our services and our resources to that family as well, because we got to look out for each other. And that's what I have to say about the situation.
We're in defense of the lieutenant governor, who's a young black man in Wisconsin. He said that last night on the nightly news, he said that these officers will, this incident will be addressed and follow up and investigated. Do you think anything going to come out from this investigation, or is it going to be status quo?
I think when you look at places like that, right, when you look at Wisconsin or when you look at Illinois, when you look at Indiana, Michigan, Minnesota,
New York, right,
I think a lot of people.
Georgia, how about every state in the union?
What I'm getting at is you have these cities, these metropolises in these states. And so I think people get carried away and think, let me give you an example. Chicago, Cook County, Illinois, is blue, it's Democrat. You know, it's like, you know, 35% black. But once you get away from Cook County and you get away from East St. Louis, which are, you know, the two opposite spectrums of the state, the rest of the state is rural, it's red for the most part. You know, you got a couple college towns here and there. And so that's what people have to understand. Like, so when we're talking about what's going on in Wisconsin, like Kenosha is not too far, you know, from Chicago, basically where I grew up at. Kenosha's right across the state line. But all that stuff, once you get up there, all that stuff is rural. So I understand if this young brother is like, you know, we want to do something. But when you're talking about these towns outside of the metropolis, is outside the major areas.
I live in a rural place in Illinois, in southern Illinois.
Okay. So you get it. When you start getting down there toward like Cairo, Illinois, and all them other places.
Right, it's 50 miles from Cairo. I'm right by Carbondale.
Carbondale. So you get exactly what I'm saying. When you get outside of these urban centers, that rural community, they run what's going on. So now you're talking about Kenosha. So now you have to have an investigation. Unless you get somebody from the district attorney's office in Milwaukee that's going to investigate this, nothing is going to come of it, because what they're going to say is, because they're like two different angles, what they're going to say is he wasn't compliant. They had him on the ground. He had a weapon. He was going to get in his vehicle. They feared for their life. The tasers didn't work, and they had to kill him. Like, it's their playbook. This is what they run. This is the plays that they run.
Well, they're going to have a problem with that playbook, because he has lawyers in his family who live close and in the area. So they're going to have problems with that one.
Well, I'm hoping, you know, it's tragic what happened to him, and I'm hoping people see that that's, you know, pulling that gun out is not always the answer. But for them, like Brother Travis said, that qualified immunity gives police officers basically a license to kill people, right? Like me as a law-abiding citizen and as a responsible gun owner, I can't just see somebody outside and shoot them down the street and be like, well, I felt like he was a threat and all the thing he had in his hand was a cell phone. You know, being a law enforcement officer in the United States is the only place in the civilized world that you can get away with this stuff. If you're in the military and you go overseas and you shoot an unarmed civilian, and you're going to Fort Leavenworth, Kansas, you're going to jail. But here, they can get away with that type of stuff. Here, they can kill civilians, and nothing comes of it, you know?
Justice. What you just said, Brother Nick, if you are in the military, let me see if I heard you correctly, okay? If you're in the military and you go to another country fighting on behalf Nick, call back. He just got disconnected. Fight on behalf of the United States of America, and if you accidentally kill a civilian, you're going to Fort Leavenworth. You're going to prison. Is that what he said?
That's exactly what he said, and it's called the rules of engagement. They had the Geneva Convention.
But the police kissed you us intentionally or accidentally and go about their business? Oh, they get on ministry.
You tell them the Geneva Convention, there are rules. There's laws of warfare that we have to abide by, right? Like the whole world, well, a lot of countries in the world, we have these laws that we have to abide by. Like they sit down and negotiate and say, we can fight each other, but we're going to follow these rules. Let me tell you something else that's in Geneva Convention. You know when people are protesting and they shoot that riot gas, that CS gas,
yeah,
and they try to get people to disperse, guess what?
Right.
That's a violation of Geneva Convention. That's a violation. That's a war crime. If we use that same chemical to try to get somebody out of a house as a service member, we're fighting them, and to save them, to save lives, if we shot it into a house and enemy combatants come running out, we just violated the law of warfare, and we can be held on war crimes for using the same stuff that they're using on our people here in the States.
You mean to tell me that if we were smart, we could take the United States criminal justice system to the Geneva Convention or to the UN?
Hey, that's what Minister Malcolm did before they killed him.
Right, before they assassinated him. Yeah. Yeah.
Exactly.
He was on the right track.
Exactly.
There.
So
breaking the police in the United States when it comes to black and brown folks. They are breaking international law.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Well, I didn't know that. I really didn't know that. Wow, that's really something. Go ahead, y'all. Go ahead, Michonne.
Okay. I did notice. I went and brought me a few days ago an AR-15.
Beautiful.
And when I go to the gun stores to buy me guns, I'm the only black person in there. All there is white males. They're buying up all kind of ammunition, everything. I am too. Because I'm like, I'm not going to let one of them take me out.
Yeah, that was Dr. Claude Addison said too. You get stock of them.
Got to.
So
great job.
I decided that every few months I'm gonna buy me a new. I like tactical weapons now. I don't know how, but I'm into tactical weapons. But anyway, what can we do to get more black people? But before I finish with that, I did find when I was reading, doing research, that African Americans count for the highest increase in gun purchase of any group.
Absolutely.
As of
absolutely.
August 3rd.
Absolutely.
And you know what? I'll be glad to elaborate on that for you.
Okay.
My daughter won't buy a gun now. I don't know. I don't let guns around me, to tell you the truth. Yeah, because, they could go. I mean, the person should at least go to class and be trained on how to use a weapon and know that this is not a toy.
I agree, because I plan on taking my granddaughter. She wants to learn how to use one, and she's 10, so I'm going to get her. I'm going to take her, too, because her little, where I live, a lot of her little friends are white, and they always, they take them hunting. They know how to shoot.
Yep.
And she will, too.
We're behind, you know, we're, as a people, we're behind the curve on a lot of things, right? And so we have to, so what you were saying, we have to break that taboo. We have to break that cycle of us feeling like we don't, we're not allowed to own firearms. Because you have to remember, in 1620 in Virginia, the first law was passed, what is now known as the United States, that black people couldn't own firearms in 1620. Remember, we got here in 1619. In 1620, they were already passing laws saying we couldn't own firearms. It was against the law. So we've always had this perception, or we've been perceived, that if a black person with a gun is up to no good, because it's been woven into the fabric of our society for them to be trained that we aren't supposed to have firearms. So you have to recondition black America to say, no, we had a right to own firearms as well. Because it's woven into the fabric of our society that black people with guns are bad. So we have to shake that. So we have to continue to advocate for more and more black gun owners here in America.
Okay, I think that's fair, because my grandfather had guns. He went hunting. He took guns with him. My great-grandma carried a gun with her everywhere she went, including church. So in my family,
well, let me say this. Was your family from
guns?
Were they from the South, or were they from the North?
Originally, they came, like, some, well, those, some of them came from Maryland and South
that's
Carolina and Alabama.
Ooh, that's
see,
deep South,
so,
Alabama.
And that's where a lot of it comes from. A lot of blacks in the South, you know, once we started getting certain liberties, they would do it. You know, but when you start talking about the North, I mean, they would have them, but people, black people in the South, just the South overall in general, people deal with firearms, I think, more.
They walk around with guns on their hip, a Bible in one hand and a gun in another. You have a caller. Let me get this caller and grab a question. Well, welcome to Black Earth America 5240.
Hello?
You're on the air.
Oh, yes. What the gentleman was saying, this is a good topic tonight about guns. And what the gentleman was saying is what I was saying is that a lot of black African Americans, because I've got guns and own guns. And some people in my family still don't like guns for protection. You talked to a lot of women who stay by themselves, that's educated, and the first thing they tell you, I'm scared of guns. Well, you know, a gun is for your protection. Somebody try to rob you, come in there, rape you, anything, a gun is for your protection. And I see the same thing that a lot of African Americans, when it comes down to guns, they still back off from it. They still want to go alone. And I'm saying myself is that that's your protection, that you need to have your gun for your protection from anybody. Whether it be outside or whether it be up other African Americans, that's the thing that I like to push out. I'm going to tell everybody that you got to own the rights, but you got to know how to, you know what I'm saying, know the gun laws, learn how to shoot, learn how to do all the stuff that I was taught by white folks who taught me about guns and other stuff. So this is a good topic, but a lot of African Americans are still to this day. In 2020, you talk to them, they still want to steal with some guns. So I just need my Bible. God said he'll protect you. Oh, okay, God is going to protect you for a little bit. Then you got to protect yourself. I get so tired of hearing that. God going to protect me. He goes, okay, God is going to protect a lot of people. So if they would have had a gun, they would have protected themselves. You have to have the right knowledge and say, okay, God is going to protect me. But I'm going to carry my pistol, my Glock, or my AR-47 or my rifle. But I got a little bonus for my own protection. You know what I'm saying? It's a Glock protection, and I got my gun. So I got two people protecting me. And that's the way African-Americans got to go out there and stop saying, you know, I get so tired of hearing that. God's going to, I'm scared, kick you. Anything can happen. Okay, anything could happen. But if you're a law-abiding citizen and you're not going out there doing robbing, you're not going out there to do nothing, you're just protecting yourself and your family, which is your God-given right. Now, I don't care about no amendment. It's your God-given right to protect yourself, even though God say, hey, you know, I got you. I understand that. But it's 2020, and I'm glad the young gentleman said that, 2020, we feel scared, trembling, carry a gun. And when you go to these gun classes, you know, you go to some of these gun places, all you see is white folks looking at you sometimes with the evil eye because you are crying about a gun or you want to look about a gun. Man, F them. Like I said, we need to start being ready to carry guns for our protection, our property, our kids. And you're right, in the South, they did carry guns in the South more than they did in the North. But guess what? They was going to shoot some white people for bothering their kids and raping their kids and stuff. And I knew an older black guy was almost 90-something years old. He carried a gun years ago because, like you said, I'd be damned if one of them touched my two daughters. So my thing for him as African-Americans, we got to spread the word. Let's stop being scared about guns. And we got to teach kids at a young age, just like they do. We got to teach kids at a young age to get familiar with the gun. Learn about the gun. I mean, teach the kids to, you know, to shoot guns and get familiar with the bullets and all the stuff. But we teach them at a young age that we get their mind prepared. The gun is not the enemy. The gun is not the enemy. The enemy is the person that's coming to violate you. That's the enemy, not the gun. The gun is for your protection. And we need to stop doing that to kids at 2 years old from now on. The gun is not the enemy. Whether it be from another race or other blacks or anybody. I've been robbed, not by whites, but been blacks. But I didn't have a gun on me. But if I would have, it would have been a different outcome. But like I said, guns are not the enemy. And we need to start teaching our folks that now, blacks, African Americans, that the guns are not the enemy. Still to this day, I'm tired, I'm trembling, I don't know. Anything bad can happen. Oh, I don't know about that and all that. Man, that is aggravating. It pisses me off. But like I said, I don't want to get too deep tonight. But I want to thank the gentleman for about guns and what's going on in San Antonio and if there's other things that in the future that we can join to get together because we need to start buying guns and letting everybody know the gun is not the enemy. The enemy is the person that's coming to violate you, violate your family, your kids, your uncle, your brother. That's the enemy. And we can protect ourselves by any means necessary. We'll keep doing that then, sir. Keep doing that.
Any response to that, Nick or brother Travis?
Well, this is what I'm going to say. I appreciate you, brother, and thank you, man, for what you're doing and expressing yourself about the Second Amendment. And I want to let you know that a lot of people in our community are going to pull out these pork chop preachers that tell you just to pray to God and look up to the sky and hope that God is going to save you and rescue you from white supremacy and racism that's out here. But I'm going to tell you something that's very important, and I want everybody in Black America to understand this. I looked up some information on a show that I did on Friday, this past Friday, on Black Dollars University on YouTube. It's called The Righteousness of a Black Man. The righteousness of a black man is about the righteousness that's already in us, that's been given to us by God, because we are the first people. We are the Adam and Eve. Never forget that. We're the originators of this planet. We're the first ones that were created in the image of God, and we all know this. And so what you must understand for all you godly people out there that keeps talking to us about the Bible and talking to us about holding it down and praying and getting on your knees. I want you to understand that righteous anger is moral and justifiable, and it is not sinful in the eyes of God. So the anger that we have is righteous anger, and it is moral and justifiable and virtuous. So you don't have to worry about the anger that you have, because it's justified by God and it's not considered sin. So what we're doing right now, protecting ourselves from the wicked and the evil that's out there with the people that practice white supremacy, we are justified in our anger. So you don't have to worry about that anymore. We're already taken care of by the hands of God. We just need to execute and make sure that we protect each other from harm and danger. Black power to you, brother. That's all I got to say about it on that topic right there.
Thanks. I appreciate that.
Yeah, and we love you, brother. And if you want to come down to the Second Amendment Unity Walk, we got it going on. You can go to Elmer Geronimo Pratt Gun Club on Facebook, and you can find the information there. If you want to come down, brother, we'll be glad to have you. And we're not messing around. We standing up for black power, and we got real policies on the table. We're not just going out there to hold guns and just to talk and get together and sing Kumbaya. We got actual legislation that we are going to be presenting to Texas lawmakers, and we are holding all lawmakers in this country accountable for what's going on right now in regards to racism. And we will continue to exercise our Second Amendment rights, and they will not be infringed by any white supremacists out there. We will protect our community at all costs because we have given our lives to the revolution, and this is serious business. Thank you, brother.
Let me ask y'all a question. Why do you think, if this might be a little bit off topic, but why do you think the Nation of Islam don't like gun ownership?
Well, for me, I can honestly say that I'm not with the, I can't speak on something that I don't know about, you know, as far as actually experiencing and practicing the Nation of Islam or experiencing reading, you know, the Quran and stuff like that. But I can say that the brothers we have the brothers, the Nation of Islam, the FOI brothers who are here in Texas, they will be out there with us, and they will be out there monitoring and making sure that the people in the crowd are being you know, content and engaged with what we're doing, but also being aware for the threat, so that if there is a threat, we'll be able to suppress the threat and make sure that everyone that's out there to support the Second Amendment Unity Walk is protected. But as far as why they don't carry guns, you know, it's I'm not a Muslim, so I can't speak for those brothers. But I can say this, that I do support what they do. I do like some of the teachers of the Honorable Elijah Muhammad and Minister Farrakhan, who they try to dehumanize in the white media. And also Nick Cannon, he could have definitely, you know what I'm saying, he could have definitely stepped up. But you went back and reverted to what happened with the rabbis and the Jewish community. We don't care about what's going on with the Jewish community. We care about what's going on with our leaders and our prominent leaders that do speak in our language for us. And I just want to salute to the Nation of Islam and those brothers for the work that they've been doing throughout the years and still continuing to do. And yeah, we will be united with them and thank them. I want to thank them personally from the Elmer Geronimo Pratt Gun Club for coming out and supporting the Second Amendment Unity Walk. And assalamu alaikum, alaikum salam.
Michonne, you have anything to say, to add?
Yes, I do. Why is the Congressional Black Caucus always yelling gun control, we don't need guns, and like lobbying against gun ownership?
Because they're compromised. That's all it really comes down to. They're what we consider plantational Black Americans, right? Mm-hmm. Like they got one foot in freedom and one foot still in slavery, and they're a slave to the Democratic plantation. So whatever the master wants is, see, what people have to understand is you get a lot of these black mouthpieces for white supremacy, right? Democrats and Republicans are just opposite sides of the same coin. And the sooner we as a people realize that, the better off we'll be. See, you got people going against each other, black people going against each other, talking about, oh, you on the Democratic, the Democrat plantation, you on the Republican plantation. Well, you both on the plantation because you picking a side. We need to break those chains, and we need to do our own thing. And that's how we cause real change. But those Democrats, those black Democrats talking, let me ask you a question. It can be rhetorical or somebody can answer it. But why do you think these same cities, they talk about gun control, gun control, gun control? And again, I already explained where I'm from, and people talk, it's a white supremacist talking point, because when everything else fails, they bring up Chicago, okay, or they bring up Baltimore, or they bring up all these other urban centers. But there's gun control in place, right? It's extreme gun control. Well, the reason why we have all these issues is because the law-abiding citizens don't have guns to protect themselves, protect their neighbors, protect their families, protect their property. So it's lawlessness. There's no equalizer. And that's what people have to understand. The police aren't equalizing anything. And that's another thing. Like, people get caught up on this, we can't defund the police. Well, what are the police really doing for black people but over-policing and using the 13th Amendment as a loophole to send black people to jail, slavery, to get slave labor? But they're trying to push a narrative that doesn't make any sense. So we already don't – people legally can't own firearms or certain firearms in most of these centers where this crime is taking place. So if that doesn't work, what's the definition of insanity? Doing the same thing over and over again, expecting a different result. The results are the same. We have to change what we're doing. And so if that means that we need to allow more people, black people, in the urban centers to own firearms to defend themselves, then that's what we need to do. Because I can guarantee you, when some gangbangers pull up, jumping out, trying to shoot somebody, and it's a couple of 30 or 40-year-old legal brothers sitting across the street on the porch, seeing them getting ready to shoot some kids, I guarantee you they'll take action. And I guarantee you people are going to start thinking twice before they do that stuff, because they know, just like most of these other states in the South, if you do try to do something like that in Texas, everybody has a gun. So people think twice before they do stuff like that. Houston and Chicago are comparable in size and population. But then look at the numbers when you look at crime. Houston is a lot lower than Chicago. Why? Because there's a checks and balances in place. So when these Democrats are telling you, oh, we need gun control, they're setting you up for failure. They're trying to control you. That's the real control they're trying to do.
I didn't know if the Black Caucus was still around. They've been quiet on everything. They've been quiet on brutality. They've been quiet on injustice. They've been quiet on reparations. They've been quiet on many, many issues.
They're a lame duck. You ask them about anything other than black people, they'll answer. You go ask them about DACA and immigration, they'll come talk to you about that. But when you ask them about reparations or a black agenda, they ain't got no words for you. They act like you speak in a foreign language to them.
And Nick, you said something that's very powerful, man. And I feel that they are focused, if you really pay attention, they're focused on symbolism. They're doing everything in their power to focus on the symbolism of us having freedom. We want to have freedom by symbolism, which means basically tearing down the statues, having a Black Lives Matter street, naming the street after Kobe Bryant, or they're talking about kente cloths that come from Nigeria, and they talking in Ghana, and they talking about all of these different symbolic things that aren't putting anything economically stable on the table to get us lifted off the ground from where we've been based upon the slavery that took place. So I want to just quickly tell you guys that I had and we held a Sheila Jackson Lee rally last June about H.R. 40 before the Sandy Darity edits were even thought about or kicked in, while Dr. Sandy Darity was still working on his edits. Sheila Jackson Lee told us that she was going to be at her Democratic headquarters there in Houston, downtown Houston. We went there with the ADOS family, and shout out to ADOS Houston. We went out there, and we were advocates in 110-degree heat, and we were legally authorized to be there. We had the police there with us, and they told us, the campaign manager told us that she would be there to speak with us about what we have a problem with concerning the H.R. 40. But as
What's
we take
H.R.
a look
40?
Now during the COVID, the H.R. 40 is a commission to study for reparations.
Oh, okay.
But it doesn't have anything. Oh. It doesn't have anything in the of teeth in the bill that will lead us to truly receive reparations and have freedom. And so we talked to Sheila Jackson Lee, and they said that she would be out there and she would be talking to us about what problems we were having with the HR 40. And she never showed up. And this was the same week that the HR, that circus that was taking place on the Hill, Capitol Hill, with HR 40 and Danny Glover and Hughes Cruz, the Puerto Rican, that's not even the foundation of Black American, ADOS, descendant of American slaves, and Ta-Nehisi Coates talking on our behalf, and they're dodging every point that needs to be made about why we need reparations and why it's important and why we need it now. And we're starting to see, as we go through 2020, which has been a turbulent year for us, mm-hmm. in some ways, but in some ways this hasn't been so turbulent. It's been waking Black people up all across this country who are tired of the mess, who are tired of the racism, who are tired of our children being buck broken with pedophilia and all these images that are being placed on the table showing that the Black man is not even visible in this country. We're tired of that. And we're taking a stand, and we've let them know. We've let the Congressional Black Caucus know where we stand, and they know where we stand. And they walked away from us. And after they walked away from us, we've been on that ass ever since, because they keep ignoring our call to action that we're making to every politician that's in the U.S. government or on the local level or the state level. We are out here advocating. We are not out here playing around talking about people of color and minorities, this Black and brown coalition bullshit, because when we're out there on ground zero, what they're doing is telling people, well, I'm LGBTQ and I'm Black Lives Matter. I'm here to support this. Well, if you're so serious about supporting what we're doing out here, then you need to get behind reparations and you need to get behind what we're doing out here and stop telling people that Black Lives Matter and it really doesn't matter to you at all, because who does Black Lives Matter to? It matters to who? The only people that it matters to is us. And we're the only ones that are truly and genuinely out here trying to get justice for people like Jacob Blake. And we're out here trying to get justice for Breonna Taylor. And we're out here getting justice for our brother George Floyd, who had his foot on his neck. And I felt like they could have did something to stop that shit. But we're here now. And this is the reality that we're in. And if we don't protect ourselves by the pen and the pistol, we are definitely going to fall by Babylon and this white supremacist system. So it's time for all of us to take action and stand up and stop hiding our hand and being scared. Because if we're scared, then we might as well just go ahead and go back to the plantation. And the only thing that changes with the plantation is the people that's on it. I'm out, Nick. You go ahead and say what you got to say, brother.
Hey, only thing I got to say is, you know, we're guaranteed, you know, two things in life. We live and we die. And what we do, you know, between that time when we're born and then when we die, is up to us. You know, a lot of people keep talking about what they're going to do or how they want to do or how can they affect it, but they, you know, they sit down, they don't stand up. And, you know, I just don't have time for people like that anymore. Like, you know, now is the time for us to go out here and execute. And if you're going to hide, if you're going to stay in your house, if you're going to be on your phone, on Twitter, and on Instagram and Facebook and talk a good game, but you ain't going to be out here in these streets, I ain't got time for you, and I'm gonna call you out too. Let me make something perfectly clear, and I'm using this figuratively, not literally, but I'm using it figuratively. The reason why slave revolts failed was because them plantationals didn't want to leave off the plantation. They thought living on the plantation was better than being free. The reason why them slave revolts failed is because the ones who revolted, the soldiers, didn't kill them plantationals before they left the plantation, and they was giving up all the game to the slave masters. What happened then ain't no different than 2020. As long as them plantations are around, those plantational Black Americans, and they giving up the game and they being the mouthpiece for white supremacy, we're going to always have a struggle. But until we can get rid of that, we're going to always have a struggle, because they're going to always fight against us because they feel like life is better on the plantation than it is to be free.
Let me ask y'all, brothers, that this, I think this is going to be the last question for the evening, because we got a couple minutes left. Why do you think, and I'm not even going to really talk about the politicians, the Black politicians, why do you think it's so hard for people to really get motivated and inspired by the Reparations Act, demanding, not asking, but demanding, I'll just do new reparations.
People are, it's fear. People are scared. Like you're seeing it. Like people, when people can talk a good game until they have to put action behind it. Like if you're not willing to risk something for the greater good, for you to get your due, then it's nothing else but fear. You're scared to go out here for whatever reason. You're scared to lose your job. You're scared to lose your family. You're scared for the police to say something to you. You're scared to be profiled. Like this what we're doing is not for the weak. It's not. That's just what it is. And if you're scared, just say you're scared. Get off social media. Stop talking. Stay home, because this ain't for you. You wasn't built for this. If you wasn't built for this, then stop talking about it. And we've run across people like that. And we tell them, if you ain't built for this, let us know now. It's fine, but get out of the way. Stay out of the way and let us do the work. And that's the problem. Once these people, it goes back. We're always, as a people, we're always scared of something. We're scared to own firearms. We're scared to speak up for ourselves. We're scared to go in there and demand what belongs to us, what's ours. Reparations belong to our ancestors. See, they denied us a generational wealth. That money should have been passed down to you and I and everybody on this call and everyone listening. So we were locked out to wealth because they kept it from us. But this is our time. This is our moment to go out here and get what was due to our ancestors. And like I said, if you're scared, say you're scared and get out of the way and let the soldiers stand up and do the work.
Right.
And I'm going to say this too, Brother Kenny. Kamala Harris has been known to be so-called tough on crime. I just want to quickly tell all the listeners out there in Black America who keep telling us that the Black agenda is getting Donald Trump out of office. I'm gonna tell you this here: Kamala Harris has been known to be so-called tough on crime with the outcomes of the Black communities in Oakland and San Francisco, California, while she served as an attorney general and district attorney. The Democrats have taken our votes for granted in the last 55 to 60 years, and most descendants of American slaves under the age of 50 are saying no more voting for the soft or hard white supremacy. They have nothing tangible for Black America after we've demanded a Black agenda to end the system of white supremacy and obtain reparations for the Black American slaves who built this nation on the backs of our ancestors with free labor. Four more years of Donald Trump doesn't scare us at all after we've had white supremacists like him for the last 400 years and counting. We demand concrete policies that are specifically catered to the descendants who came from the killing fields of America. Getting number 45 out of office is not the Black agenda. And voting will not end racism. We will. No tangibles, no vote. No Black agenda, no vote. Reparations right now. We need it right now to restore our people. The Second Amendment Unity Walk, September 26th, 12 noon. Black power begins. Let's get it.
And on that note, I thank Brother Nick and Brother Travis for coming on to the show. I really enjoy our discussion when your two brothers come on. And I know the rally gonna do very well, and continue to fight, gentlemen. Continue to fight.
Appreciate it. Thanks for having us on.
Thank you. No problem. That's it for another week. Tune in to Michonne for tomorrow night. And as always, I am because we are. We are because I am. Good night, everyone.
Good night. Hold it now.